Hey everyone, it's time to kick off another exciting session of our DevOps Office Hours. It's August 30th, 2023. My name's Eric Osterman, and I'll be your host. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. Cloud Posse helps teams conquer AWS using our rock-solid Terraform blueprints. Whether you're starting from scratch or just not satisfied with your current setup, book a session with me directly by going to cloudposse.com/quiz. Answer a few quick questions, and we'll have a call to show you exactly what your future could look like, and more importantly, how your team will succeed. For those of you new to the call, don't worry, our format's very informal. My goal is to answer your questions. If you're curious about Cloud Posse or any of our open source tools or modules, this is a great place to ask. For those of you joining through our podcast or YouTube channel, we host these calls live every week, so don't miss out. You can register by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Again, cloudposse.com/officehours. Our call today is recorded. We'll be posting a recording of this session to the YouTube channel. So if you want to support what we do over here, please hit those like and subscribe buttons. It helps us out a great deal. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse. Again, youtube.com/cloudposse. And don't forget, if you found anything interesting in our session today, you can share those videos with your team and keep everyone on the same page. So with that said, let's get into some announcements. So the first one is something wasn't on my radar, so I was actually kind of hoping somebody could explain it to me a little bit more. AWS acquired Fig. What is Fig?
Fig was/is autocomplete for your terminal.
I saw that. Can you start a company based on autocomplete? I found that pretty extreme. And then there was something like other people put it in the category of AI or something somewhere. So is there an AI aspect to Fig?
I don't remember there being. I used it in the past. It was pretty nice, like the autocomplete, especially for all AWS CLI options, was very nice.
This is actually kind of cool.
Oh, it has AI.
That's kind of cool, actually.
Pretty cool.
I like that. Okay, I can get on board with that. I wish I'd known about that before. There's been a lot of these like AI for the command line or GPT for the command line things. We've announced them on previous office hours, but this is a pretty clean implementation. I like it, and I like how it's represented. Translate English to Bash. All right. Next one, very exciting news is somebody shared in the office hours Slack. was Amazon VPC CNI now supports Kubernetes network policies. So that's convenient. Now you can use Kubernetes manifest resources to set up the network policies. Previously not supported. Anything else we should talk about related to this announcement? For all Kubernetes minor versions 1.25 and above, but disabled by default at launch. All right, interesting. Cool. OpenTF news, it's been a hot topic for everyone kind of in the Terraform community, at least in my circle. The OpenTF organization or initiative at this point has announced that a fork is forthcoming. The fork is not yet public because it's going through review and making sure it checks off all the boxes. It is not just to fork a repo, especially in terms of a license change. Also, HashiCorp does have a trademark on Terraform, so lots of things need to be accommodated there. I think this is why there's been frustration all around that, like, you know, why hasn't there been more movement? Well, there's a lot that goes into creating a fork of this magnitude and under the conditions that it's happening. So this is hopefully forthcoming. I don't have any updates or know more than you guys on when it will be public, but it is coming. Anyone have more to add based on that?
Not to add, but have you
seen the new orchestration tool that's coming up also as a competitor to Ansible? It's called Jet.
Jet, JET.
JET, yes.
I think somebody mentioned it, but no, I'm not familiar with it. Do you want to, announce it?
Well, it's still under development as well, but it's a competitor to Ansible. It's being built in Rust. And that's as much as I know about it right now. I just wanted to find out if you guys had any other news in it, or especially with the whole OpenTF thing, to see if there like other alternatives are coming to the front for people that don't want to be stuck in the enterprise business license stuff with Terraform.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't heard about it, but it's this is definitely worthy of an announcement, but seems extremely, seems extremely early. I guess it's
It's currently being developed, but if you subscribe somewhere, they have a Substack and they've been sending updates to what they're working on and how they're approaching it. You can click
Okay.
no thanks and see the posts, I think.
Ah.
It's not paid, no. This is just Substack trying to
Oh,
upsell you.
okay, I gotcha. Cool there. Okay. Okay. Well, that's interesting. That yeah, I'll look into that a little bit more. If any, unless it's somebody else has some specific other like interesting observations, features, benefits of the tool, I guess we'll have to move on. You know what it will be licensed? Oh, it said GPL. Okay. Cool. Next announced related to that, obviously there's been some press coming out of OpenTF, including a POC of a OCI compliant storage for modules or providers. Keep in mind that OpenTF intends to operate just like any other well-established open source organization. These POCs are not going to go into the core without any form of RFC process and discussion and inclusion from the community. This is just showing kind of or teasing what the potential is. These are not original ideas. These are ideas that have been very popular in HashiCorp's Terraform, opened as issues, been open for years, some of them. So this is just showing that it's not a heavy lift. The reason why these things aren't implemented is not a heavy lift. They just need to be prioritized. So this is an example of what is the potential of a project like this. Now, there's concern about things like this breaking compatibility, and that's true. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be breaking, and there can be backward compatible changes. And also, this is the spirit of healthy competition, is to lead by benefits and functionality that ultimately benefits the end user. And then HashiCorp will implement awesome new things. Similar, things can be implemented in alternative versions as well. So I think OCI compliant storage for providers would be really nice, because when we think about Terraform, they have their own registry protocol, which requires a custom server to be hosted. Now, to date, there's many open source self-hosted options for that, but there's only, well, there, and then there's commercial ones. For example, if you're using any like Terraform Enterprise, HashiCorp, Terraform Cloud, or some of the taco providers offer it. But those are proprietary implementations. What I love about OCI is it's an open standard. It's been proven in its use for multiple other protocols. For example, Helm has moved to supporting OCI as a way of distributing charts. It is vendor agnostic. It's an open standard that's proven at scale for large images, small images, and so forth. So to keep in mind, this is not saying Docker. This is using the transport layer that Docker uses and the storage format that Docker under the hood uses. So this would, for example, make it possible for Cloud Posse to publish artifacts of our modules into ECR or into any OCI type of repository. What's also cool about that is then there are tons of tools like we talked about last week's, what was it called, Spokio or something? Terraform Registry. No, I mean, Docker Registry Mirroring Tool. I forget what the tool was called. We talked about it last week, but there's a convenient tools for mirroring OCI repositories. So now your company could very easily mirror providers and so forth into a repository that you host, that you built using your infrastructure as code, however you do it. Also in terms of availability, that would be self-hosted. I mean, you could have it on the cloud of your choice and one less third-party service in the critical path for operating your infrastructure. The other feature is a teasing of backend encryption. Again, a POC, this won't go out in an initial release of OpenTF without an RFC process. Everything is intended to follow best practices of CNCF or whichever foundation the project ends up with. So in this case, the end-to-end encryption would be implemented in a ideally non-breaking way, which is demonstrated here by setting an environment variable. I think personally, a better implementation would be using something like SOPs, but this is exactly why something like this wouldn't go into OpenTF right away. This is why there should be an RFC process and getting lots of feedback from people with lots more experience in different areas on pros and cons of different approaches. But this has been a long requested feature in Terraform. It's not been implemented and we don't know why that's the case. Any comments on that before I move on? All right. There was a video that
it is August 28th.
Everyone in the community that came out. It was somewhat satire, but promoting what is happening with the license and with the fork and some of these things. This ended up driving tremendous traffic to the manifesto, which now is up to 28,000 stars, which is pretty remarkable in just a couple of weeks. Now, stars are a vanity metric. They don't literally mean anything, but it does mean that it's gotten a lot of attention. It also has gotten some negative attention, which we can discuss today or don't need to discuss today. It all depends what everyone's interested in. But there's another side of the story that it's harder for me to argue since I'm kind of supporting this initiative, but I'm open to the way other people perceive what's going on, and we want this ultimately to benefit everyone and not to be seen as a holy war filled with virtue signaling and bashing and tit for tat retaliations. That's just a race to the bottom for everyone here. And I think we need to separate maybe how individuals feel, like I feel, and also from how this initiative is moving forward. And the initiative, I feel like, is doing a pretty good job trying not to be negative, but it can be seen both ways. I've seen complaints saying that, by teasing these features, it's deliberately trying to flex and show how, this initiative is moving fast, and yet this initiative hasn't released anything yet. So, you know, what are they doing? So I don't know. I'll stop there. Anybody care to share, you know, alternative dissenting opinions in a safe and trusted place?
How do you see that impacting CloudPos is like? At the minute, you've done a bunch of work on your Terraform modules. So yeah. if OpenTF comes about and they do a critical core change, which way are you looking to support CloudPos? Are you planning to go to keep it as open as it is and then look at incorporating OpenTF more, or are you just going to stick with Terraform and the way it is now?
Yeah, it's a good question, and one I thought I or wish I didn't have to really consider. So I posted something on this, and this is something that you might be alluding to. It came out. We don't know exactly when it changed, but it was relatively recently changed. We don't know if that's before the announcement, after the announcement, but there is, you know, if you look at the Wayback Machine, you can see that it was relatively recently changed. And what I'm alluding to is that the, you know, HashiCorp, they provide a public registry. They have decided, rightfully so, that, you know, they only want to support downloads from that registry, or access to that registry, access to their API from HashiCorp Terraform products. And that can be perceived to be a direct, you know, reaction to the OpenTF initiative. And what that means is still unknown. And I was doing some reflecting on it myself, trying to see it, you know, from both sides, and like, what are other examples of registries that are private that do probably, because I don't know, restrict what clients can access them. And then I start thinking, oh, okay, yeah, like there's like the App Store or maybe Google Play. They probably restrict the clients that can access them. So I guess in HashiCorp making this move, they are making their registry a lot like a commercial App Store, you could say. And maybe that's a deliberate move from a, you know, to benefit users, let's say, because now it, you know, they could do things like, you know, make sure that everything in their registry is scanned and has vulnerability checking and things like that. I'm just, you know, giving a hypothetical way that could be beneficial. I find it, you know, why it is so jarring for me is based on my worldview and kind of perspectives as a as the founder of a company that does, almost entirely all open source software. I tend to view the world through that lens, right? So seeing a company that went from an MPL license to Busel, I have to rethink how I think about it. What I mean by that is, I think a huge part of any tool's success, like this is a proven formula. Come up with a tool, come up with a way that you can have a registry, come up with a way that you can incentivize the community to put things in that registry so they build the value that your tool has. Great examples of this is back in the day with Perl and CPAN. I mean, CPAN is enormous, a Perl module for anything, Ruby, NPM, then came Docker. Look, Docker didn't do anything new. C groups, Linux, C groups, namespaces, all of that existed before, but they did the brilliant thing of making it accessible, creating a registry where anybody could then package that up in a tarball, essentially put it in a place other people could download it. So therefore, and Red Hat, CentOS, et cetera, all other examples. So therefore it's kind of jarring to me. On the one hand, I could see it being strategic in the App Store sense. On the other hand, it seems crippling to me because I have this worldview of open source and how that should work in my view. I'll pause there, take input. I see Darren and Jonathan Eunice have their hands up. Jonathan?
So I am a little jarred myself and confused because this is the type of move, this kind of lock things down, lock others out, circle the wagons type of move, feels like the sort of move that companies make when they are having trouble and feeling very threatened. And I, perhaps I'm just not close to it, but I was under the impression with Terraform and Vault and all of the other things HashiCorp does, I thought that they were successful almost in a boundingly successful way, that people loved what they were doing and that they were, and I'm very confused by the, this is the type of move that seems contrary to the way that I thought about HashiCorp before. Yeah. So am I just out of sync with where their business is?
I'll let somebody else answer.
I think that the open source projects are extremely popular, right? Like we all use them, love them. We're big fans. Their Terraform Cloud has been losing their game. Their competition, the startups that have built Terraform Cloud competitors, this is who they've really been targeting. It's the Spacelift, M0, Scalar, and the, you know, five others that have come up in the past year. They have been losing them to them on price and losing to them on product functionality. And because of that, that's the whole reason to move towards BSL. That's what everybody, you know, has assumed. And I think it's a correct assumption. So seemingly afraid. And this is like them doubling down. And so, you're not far off in terms of the, your perception. It's just that their business offerings are the things that weren't as widely popular as their open source offerings, and now they're making this decision.
Right.
Well, does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. That's what this type of change trumpets. The other thing I don't understand is because of the way people love Terraform, for example, or think of HashiCorp, I always kind of viewed them as likely to do well on their commercial offerings. We are a customer of MongoDB Atlas, and we were on a different MongoDB host. We moved to Atlas. We were just amazed by how good it was, how good their support is.
It's excellent.
How good their features are, how... they're just so far ahead of us in terms of extending the product, and I mean, just boundingly good. I have not, it's very true, I've not used the Terraform Cloud or not engaged with them commercially, but I was surprised by the love for the product design and so on. And yet, as you say, they kind of the feeling on pricing or functionality or whatever. We've discussed it here in SuiteOps before that some of the things that Terraform's done for cloud are, you know, anti-security, or that they, you know, they don't seem to have really nailed certain things. I'm just surprised about that.
Yeah.
I think I'll second that. MongoDB Atlas is incredible, and it's a really funny juxtaposition where I feel like MongoDB could just drop their BSL license, and I don't think AWS has any hope of possibly competing with them. Their cloud offering is just that good.
Hmm. That's a vote of confidence. Darren, I wanted to get to you. You had your hand up for a while.
It's kind of confusing to me. Maybe I'm just not fully understanding with regards to Terraform, the core source code. You know, if they want to change the license around using that source code because they own it, that's fine. But, you know, with regards to the modules themselves, you know, I kind of see them as, you know, analogous to maybe, you know, NPM or Python packages, right? It's the stuff that you build on top of the source code. Not necessarily the Terraform code itself. You know, how, Is it something they can still, you know, enable in terms of restricting access to what others have built on top of their product?
Yes and no. So they can't really. And I mean, they've been very upfront that this change has nothing to do with third-party providers and their license, has nothing to do with third-party modules written by other people. They'll continue to be under what license the author had. What makes this slightly different and kind of reminds me of another story I'll get to in a moment is the registry aspect. So because they control the registry, and the registry is how everyone discovers them, because they've then made the changes to the terms of service of the registry, now that discoverability is threatened. So the way that Terraform works today, that everyone has moved towards, like Cloud Posse, we used to only use the Git syntax. It seemed to make a lot of sense because the Git syntax in referring to modules, for example, meant we were not bound by other registries or so forth. If you could access GitHub, you could access our modules. But that became unpopular. There's also benefits using a registry. The registry works better with the version parameter and automatically updating version. You can use semver ranges.
Yeah. When
you use, the registry format and so forth. So we switched everything over to that. However, now, if somebody tries to use one of our open source modules, any other open source modules like the ones by Anton Babenko and so forth, and they're not using a Terraform CLI, then you are violating the terms of service to query that registry to find out where to get it. So this means that an alternative registry needs to be created.
But that's only if you're using a Terraform CLI greater than 155, right? If you're
using it, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
I mean, what's not trying to be trying to create loopholes, but what's stopping someone from just making a proxy
but you can't do that as a legitimate organization, right?
Right. Okay.
So individuals, private companies can do whatever they want. But if you want to be an established foundation or operate under established foundation, play by the rules, that's cheating. And that's not an ethical way of doing it.
Right.
I see. So this is interesting because if we think about other open source projects like Hudson back in the day, I still remember when I came into work one day and saw the news and we started moving towards Jenkins. But what's interesting there is there was no license change and yet everyone decided it had to fork. Why was that? Well, the problem is that the ownership changed and now Oracle was in control of Hudson and the Hudson trademark. And this is a interesting way where one can control an open source project just by controlling the trademarks therein. So because they controlled Hudson, any way Hudson, the keyword, the string is used in the source code, is ultimately their decision. So in a fork of Terraform, HashiCorp owns Terraform as a trademark and can control how it's used and therefore can control how it's used in a registry context, for example, a registry that they can control. Again, it's all within their rights, but it's just, changing the mindset. Other examples is MariaDB, which was a fork from MySQL when that was also bought by Oracle. Also to avoid control. What's interesting about that is MariaDB ended up going public through a SPAC, a reverse IPO, so to say, many, many years later. All right. Pausing there.
So really quickly. So if the OpenTF Foundation Initiative decided to bring up their own registry, And folks, obviously upload their own modules, that would be okay, right? As if I referenced or someone else referenced that new registry instead. Is that?
Yeah, that would be, so OpenTF hasn't come up with an official recommendation, as far as I know, on that. There. Oh, I forgot to announce that OpenTF did publish a roadmap, and that roadmap is you know needs still needs a lot to go into it, but it's what is progressing so far. The important thing is one of the biggest negative perceptions of the OpenTF movement has been that maybe it's not operating transparently enough in terms of what it's doing behind the scenes, that there hasn't been any release or fork actually public as of yet, among some other things. So this is a move in that direction. There's other things going on behind the scenes in this initiative that will be published as soon as those things can be made available. It's just necessary, you know, to operate by the book. There are legal implications of things here, proper, you know, doing this by the book.
And just a project of this enormous size and then being open from the go from the start, that's also basically impossible. So yeah, they need some time to ramp up and get some things in place.
Yeah, there's a lot of opinions, right, internally and externally, and pressures all around. I think it's important that I know it's very much perceived as a you know, vendor-led initiative because of the license changes and the impacts to those vendors' businesses. That is a fair that is a fair assertion. It is also true of other projects like this. If you look at OpenSearch, when it was announced, Log-Z was, you know, a vendor affected, obviously, by Elastic's license change there, and they were, you know, they launched with it. Fortunately, in that situation, a major, major, major player, Amazon, was behind it, and that added credibility up front. In this case, there are smaller vendors, but it's also a smaller ecosystem, smaller community. I was doing some research on my own. It was kind of interesting to look how much activity, how many core contributors there are to Elasticsearch. And then you compare Elasticsearch with Terraform, and it's huge. It's like in Elasticsearch, it was like two pages of core contributors, or at least very active people for years. And you look at HashiCorp, and it's like four contributors. So I think that just goes to show that the size of the projects are also not equal and the same.
I am curious what, I don't know if they've released anything about this, but what OpenTF plan is to deal with like big companies like AWS or Azure or any other one that most people use Terraform for.
Yeah.
Like, how are they going to build those relationships? And will those orgs even be interested in working with two different teams trying to do the same thing?
Yeah. So where that that's a, it's a good question. And the future is unknown at this point. The commitment, obviously, by OpenTF, as they've been public about, is to maintain compatibility. But that compatibility can only be maintained as long as the people who control the interface, control the trademarks, decide they are accepting of compatibility. And there are, you know, strategic reasons to do that or not to do that. So for example, all the providers out there under licenses, their own licenses, their own copyrights or whatnot, they should continue to work. But nothing says that that interface is going to stay the same. And, you know, we can only see so far into the future. There's obviously a lot of things that both sides, look, nobody wins in a war, right? It's a race to the bottom. If that's going to be the style of the competitive play, everyone's going to lose out, you know, myself included. I'm hoping that we find a higher ground to compete on that benefits everyone in the same way.
If I could say as much, I think when the RFC process gets ironed out, that's when you're going to see the best we have for you know, how things are going to work. And feedback into that part is where I would recommend you go, Isaac, because you could probably change a lot of what folks are focusing on. Just, you know, contributing conversation there.
I agree.
Yes. There was also in the past some problems with Ansible. Basically, it was controlled by one person, so people could suggest some stuff, but it was really restrictive.
You
saw the same name popping up also with the Jet stuff that was just talked about. So I'm curious to see how that product will be going. I think the main difference for OpenTF will be more the broader participation possibilities. If you look at some of the items that are longstanding and that they already provided a preview for, that's looking very promising. That some stuff is going to happen that not only one person wants to do or one company, but that's more like widely needed.
In the beginning, Ansible had a core team of multiple members, but those members were all volunteers. And I think the same thing happens with open source is as like you might be invested in something. I specifically had a role where I was employed to build Ansible solutions. So during that role, I was able to become, during my time at that role, a core contributor to Ansible. But as I moved out of that role, it wasn't in my best interest to maintain that. And I think that's where open source kind of almost falls down.
I agree. That's why you see so many of these projects by individual contributors that ultimately, you know, go unmaintained. The hope is by having this under a bona fide foundation, building a organic, healthy community around it and governance, then a project like this can have legs. But it's not going to work if that doesn't happen. And that's why I think there, you know, if you look at how some of these foundations work, there's an incubator and you graduate from that into other levels of maturity. Sandbox to incubator to, you know, full-fledged project. I think one thing I forgot to say, when I was asked originally, how will OpenTF handle, you know, working with cloud providers and so forth, or cloud, like, I maybe misheard that. I heard it when you asked it, like, the companies, like the Amazon company, the, you know, Google as a company, as a cloud provider. And in, as it relates to that, I don't believe the tool needs to have any relationships directly with those companies. It's the software providers, it's the underlying plugins that need to work with those, and those should continue to work just as they are today. What's interesting about how Terraform works is it itself is just calling all of these plugins as executables and using basically pipes to talk to them back and forth. So technically Terraform itself is replaceable and with a totally separate CLI built from the ground up that just calls the providers directly themselves. Presumably there might be some conflict of interest if those call HashiCorp maintained providers, but there are other providers as well. I mean, the majority of providers out there are not maintained by HashiCorp. Yeah, as Jeremy in the chat says, Terraform can be crudely summarized as a pluggable dependency graph solver. All right. Anything else on that topic? Vlad, did you want to share any opinions?
If you have, I continue to not be able to take OpenTF seriously. I had a long post for why. I look forward to OpenTF surprising me, but all the actions taken by OpenTF until now, to me, show that they have no idea what they're doing. And I don't want to be mean, but that's what I've seen. That's what was communicated. And yeah, I hope it will succeed because HashiCorp does need a kick in the butt, but I haven't seen any sign of that so far.
Gotcha. Which is fair, right? Everyone, and that's why I want to make sure everyone can speak. And I'm sure, you know, in hindsight, there are probably things that could have been done better or more clearly. Hopefully, like you said, the next few weeks will be telling and how it's run and organized.
I think something that struck me, because I saw an article about this on Hacker News and I was reading it, and like you said, how the foundation proceeds is going to make a big difference in perception. But one complaint that came up a lot was that a lot of the people behind OpenTF have not necessarily been good sponsors or supporters of open source until this. And so it's interesting to think about that. And I think it is a legitimate like complaint. And I guess, I don't know, for me personally, if I ever do want to do a startup or anything and I want to work with open source, I guess I have to keep that on my mind. Like, am I a true believer or is it just when it's convenient to me? Of course, I'm not talking about Cloud Posse here. You guys are obviously
like, no, I understand.
To the core. Yeah.
How do you say? Money is a financial motivator. It goes without saying. I think money is a unfortunate, necessary evil, if I may say. In open source, Cloud Posse spends tens of thousands of dollars a month maintaining open source, which is not a small price to pay. But is it altruistic? I don't know. We get business ultimately through it, so you could say it's our channel of marketing. Now, why do I say that? So OpenTF, it is a vendor-led initiative, let's say, vendors who are directly impacted by this, but they're putting their money where their mouth is and investing sizable sums already to make this a possibility. Those monies are being spent already on engineers, marketing activities, news activities, documentation activities, project planning activities, all the things that you need to go into one of these projects. But just like when you start a company, you don't start a company in a weekend. You have an idea in a weekend and a POC. It takes, Cloud Posse, I thought I was going to have the company. I started the company in 2015. I told a potential business partner at the time, I'm going to have this reference architecture ready in 6 months. And here I am, years and years later, still chipping away at it. I think there will be a lot that has to go into one of these things. If one knew exactly everything that one would go into something like this, it's the reason why most people don't start a business. It's the 10X rule, which I believe a lot in, that you have to put in 10 times the effort and expect it to take 10 times longer, but you will achieve great heights if you do.
I think to continue to on that point, I wouldn't expect startups to invest their resources in contributing heavily to open source. But to your point, Eric, these companies who have had their businesses, their startups threatened, they are putting their money where their mouth is. And if that is what leads us to a truly open Terraform, then that is great. That's what I personally want, because the other side of it is that the hashy like Terraform Cloud is your it is just pushing out the competition, and they are the only alternative, and they're basically doing that because they weren't providing enough of a competitive offering, and that just seems like, hey, it's not open and our options are not as good, right? Our options become limited in terms of how we can what software we can use to run Terraform. And that's just that's not like the software world that I'm sure a lot of us would want to exist in, right? Like, we don't want our options to be limited. We want competition because that's healthy and, enables growth.
Agree with you, and I think it's a tough choice for any startup to determine how they want to spend their energy and their efforts. And what HashiCorp is doing does seem like a rug pull, and I just wish people at the company would kind of pay attention to the chatter going on in their users, because this kind of thing is upsetting.
All right, I'll pause there for a moment on this topic. Let's cover some other things, and we'll see if there's any other things, but I appreciate all the insights. So yeah, nothing. We might have brought it up before, but it was somebody posted it again in our internal Slack, and it's one of these things I would love to try out. It is a source available, so guessing not a permissive license, but a way to self-host a Zapier-like pipeline automation with multiple plugins for different integrations. Be curious if anyone's already tried Nathan.
Yeah, this one, and there's another one as well. I just can't recall the name right now, but I've played with these in my home automation lab, and some of the tasks work really nice. I would like to see a bit of a better twist on this. There's a company by the name of Tines, T-I-N-E-S.io. That's kind of turned this into a serverless security automation service offering where they have similar functionality that plugs into like Jira's and Confluence and security tools that also has like this whole workflow definition type of thing. So there's some really nice tools out there. I do like the open source more. I'm more of an advocate of it's my data and my data residency should be with me. So that's my personal feeling on the matter, but I do like these tools a lot. I use them a lot in teaching people on how to automate their life. So take off an hour task and you spend an hour to automate it, but then it's a 2-minute job or it's automated completely and you never have to think back on it again.
Yeah.
Or yeah. NATS also look at the workflows and triggers and actions that are of interest to you. I remember some of them not having all the options that Zapier had. But that was a while ago, so I'm not up to date.
That's ultimately going to be the limiting factor is, how many. Not too shabby, though.
Yeah, that's a good list right there. I wonder how they got that. It seems like they're newer, and yet they're doing well, because we've talked about this before, Eric, but it's hard to get off Zapier when everyone first goes to supporting Zapier.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Somebody created a add-on recently for Home Assistant. So you can self-host it. I got to check that out. Oh, somebody's talking, but they're very muted.
Our apologies. The other alternative to N810 is called Node-RED.
Oh, yeah, Node-RED is a popular one in Home Assistant. Yeah. But Node-RED doesn't have all those integrations, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
But, it's all HTTP calls it on the back end of it in any case, I guess.
Yeah. All right, let's see here. Next announcement. This one here. I don't know. I'm laughing at myself kind of. So I started looking at some of the people behind working on, related to OpenTF. And, one of the criticisms is no open source. But this is an example of a great, cool tool. With nearly 5,000 stars by one of the OpenTF people. It's a cool tool, Octo SQL. It lets you do joins across databases and different data sources and even different types of file formats, and then query that data using SQL. So kind of like a brute force tool for doing joins on different types of data.
It's very neat, very nice. Using Postgres as basically the integration layer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And last announcement, Mr. Jenkins shared Microsoft is bringing Python to Excel. So that's kind of cool. Especially,
yeah, I thought so. It's pretty neat. I haven't looked into it too far. I just kind of thought that it was interesting that Microsoft is bringing Python into a product where Visual Basic for applications has kind of been the de facto standard for scripting for, I mean, 30, 40 years now, or however long I can remember. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, we'll see how far it goes. It'd be really cool if you could get all the syntactical sugar that you can with VBA, with Python, and then you could do like that type of stuff in an Excel spreadsheet. That would be awesome.
Yeah. It's a, was it why like Jupyter Hub has been become so popular, right? As the embedded Python in there. Now we just need to root for Google to add Python to Google Sheets. All right, let's move to Q&A. Any questions and answers? Well, any questions, we'll get you the answers. All right, no questions?
I do have a general question.
All right.
Has anyone heard of or used Score? I think it's by Humanitech. They try to sell like a developer platform software all thing.
What was it called? Humanitech?
Score. S-C-O, yeah.
Workload score is an workload specification. It allows developers to describe it. Huh. No, I never heard of it, to be honest.
Got really big on GitHub because their marketing is just crazy good. I don't know anybody using it yet either, but it's basically a way to describe. It's kind of like, what's the QVela spec? The like open application model, it's kind of similar to that, where you can say, hey, I have an application, it depends on these things, and then
are you thinking of Earthly, or are you thinking of maybe Dagger?
No, I was thinking of the open application model. I'll pull up a link. But like
those both are the two that I thought of.
They, what Score is trying to do is you provide a manifest of all of the info about your application and what it depends on, and then you can kind of spin up, you know, it'll be intelligent about creating a Helm chart for you or an ECS task definition or something along those lines, so that it's more wherever you want to deploy or allows you to, you know, be generic about what you're describing. I don't know anybody using it though, Isaac.
So, I don't either.
To hear about it, if somebody is using it, I didn't see too much value in it personally because I don't see those switches as being something that should happen too often. And you know, you'd be smart about them early on and then avoid switching. But would love to hear if anybody has messed with it.
Yeah, I haven't either. So, I'm also a little bit like put off by how intense their marketing is, and I was just curious if there's like a real open source equivalent that isn't like a way to drive you towards their product.
It's the sort of Docker Compose on a higher level Terraform alternative.
My understanding is it's kind of just like an easy way. It's those things, but it's mostly an easy way to allow your dev teams to just use one YAML for everything that they need to spin up. And then a Kubernetes operator will take that and do whatever it is that you need to do for your environment.
It's the next exception in infrastructure as code.
Yeah, it looks interesting.
I've been trying to think of a way to bring platform engineering to my company. And we're making a large shift towards Kubernetes. And I was wondering what folks' thoughts are with regards to, you know, initially I was thinking using the Terraform Kubernetes provider to do either Helm releases or manifest deployments, or maybe, you know, maybe even using Argo CD. It seems they're kind of tooling for managing lifecycle and rollbacks of deployments quite easy and scalable and transparent. And anybody have any recommendations and thoughts on, you know, how they feel some type of platform engineering as workload has worked for them if they use Kubernetes at a production level?
My main concern is that this is a big topic and we only have a few minutes left. Would you be open to bringing it up next Wednesday on the call?
I would, yes. Yeah.
Cool. Let's do that. Let's pause on that one. Cool. I think it's good.
Maybe we could chat about it in Slack.
Yeah, or you can start in Slack and we can pick it up here next week.
Sounds good.
Cool. Well, thanks. I guess on that note, let me pause things here so we don't start a new topic that we can't answer. Unless any quick questions, I'm happy to take right now. And otherwise, we should get going. All right, everyone. Thank you for participating in our office hours this week. I hope you got something out of it. We're going to be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel. You'll find that at youtube.com/cloudposse in a few hours. Please remember to like and subscribe. It helps us out a great deal. To participate in our Slack community, go to slack.cloudposse.com. We also have an office hours channel there where we discuss all the things going on here in office hours. Our newsletter goes out weekly. When I remember to update it, go to newsletter.cloudposse.com. Register for our live office hours at cloudposse.com/office-hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office-hours. And our podcast is a syndication of our office hours, however you listen to podcasts. Go to podcast.cloudposse.com for that. If you're curious about Cloud Posse, how we can help you in your business, go to cloudposse.com/quiz, book a quick meeting with me, and we'll see if we can move the needle. Otherwise, hope to see you all next week, same time, same place. Take care.